The University of Kansas Health System is proud to be the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Current. From youth athletes to the pros, we put player care first to turn their dreams into reality. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/kccurrent.
Welcome to the end of the weekend.
Please don't let today be Monday. Please don't let today be Monday. Please, 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 please don't let today be Monday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
And then what followed was bad, even by Monday standards.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We just did a lot of good Chiefs stuff. Because yesterday, in case you missed it, the Royals didn't play. Not like they usually don't play. Like, not that they didn't play well. They didn't play at all yesterday. And today, they are playing again. They're playing twice today. Got a doubleheader coming up today. And I just saw Danny Klingscale get here, so he is doing Baseball Tonight pregame, whenever that starts. But so the unfortunate thing about the Royals not playing yesterday is that I don't have a new point to make from yesterday's game, because there wasn't one. However, everything from yesterday still stands. And I'm guessing that most people listening to 8, 10, and 11 o'clock on a Sunday weren't listening at 9 a.m. on a Saturday. So I want to rehash this. The Royals, after their game on Friday, were 5.5 games out of first place and only 5 games back of the wild card. That's pretty good. There's some optimism in that. They also have the worst record in the American League. Not so optimistic there. And last weekend, you guys were getting hopeful, right? The Royals swept the Orioles. They went 6-1. Had a nice long run there. I said, come back to me 10 games from now. That gives the Royals 3 games with the Yankees, 3 at the Twins, and then 4 more at the Yankees. And with 4 of those games under their belt now, the Royals are 1-3. They've got 2 games with the Twins today. Then they go to New York. This is an important stretch because you got a good AL team in the Yankees and the team at the top of your division in the Twins. I believe the Royals have lost every game to the Twins so far this year. I think I got that one right. That's not a great way to make up the ground between the bottom of the division and the top. And at this point, you can do the math and be pessimistic, and you can use your eyes and be pessimistic. You can see how this has been going and have your optimism pretty fully strangled, suffocated, squeezed out of your pores. I'm at a point now where I just don't want to see the value of these trade assets decline. And it's difficult to step back and say, you know what? We got to throw in the towel. This is it. I'm calling this one a night. But at this point, you've got to be ready to self-evaluate. And you can't wait until the Royals are mathematically eliminated to make this call. Eventually, you have to say, all right, I've seen enough of this. I want to see what Kane or Hosmer or Vargas or Herrera can bring in prospects. I personally would pay Mike Moustakas, so that's why he wasn't in that list. But on Thursday, Surin and the program talked to Dayton Moore, and the whole interview was all very interesting. It's podcasted on 810WHB.com. But there was one specific thing that Dayton Moore said that just feels kind of silly to me. Because I just don't think we're talking about the same thing. Seren used the word tank or tanking at one point, and Dayton Moore jumped in and delivered this message.
If tanking is a part of your mentality, you shouldn't be in professional sports. In fact, you shouldn't be in sports. I mean, that's how strongly I feel about it. I mean, if somebody sits around and talks about tanking, not giving their best effort, so why should you have the privilege to lead if you talk about tanking?
Well, and I think that's a great point, and I think those are strong.
Are you going to tell? Let me ask you, sir. Are you going to tell your children, your beautiful children? You have two girls, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are you going to tell your two beautiful girls, hey, don't go out there and give your best effort today?
No.
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 Not. And you're not wired like that, sir.
Dayton Moore knows what Seren meant. Dayton's trying to frame what tanking is in a way that is not realistic, is not applicable, is not what we're talking about. Because the way Dayton Moore is putting tanking is going out and not giving your best effort. Going out and just booting the ball around the outfield. Giving up some little league home runs. Flinging the ball over Eric Hosmer's head into the dugout. Intentionally losing games. And obviously, that's an easy thing to declare a war on. No, we would never intentionally lose games. We would never not do our best. Of course. Duh. If you're not going to try to win in sports, then I'm with Dayton Moore. You're right, you shouldn't be in sports. But don't confuse that, and don't let him confuse you. That he's actually saying you have to constantly do your best to win as many games as possible this year. There's a difference there. There's a distinction, an important distinction. The best thing for the Royals right now is to look ahead. Is to build for the next thing. Doing your best right now for the Kansas City Royals isn't leaving all of your expiring stars out on the base paths for the remainder of this year and then rebuilding from total ground zero next year. That's not what's best for the organization. If your ultimate goal is to simply win as many games this year as you can, then I guess it probably is the best thing. But that's not how sports works. Because if that's the case, then everybody would be a buyer at the trade deadline. And no one would be allowed to sell. The Reds were willing to trade Johnny Cueto, not because they were trying to intentionally lose games, but because they said, we need prospects more than we need this pitcher right now. He's not going to do anything for us in this last half season of service. The Royals were buyers. They've run out of time with their guys. Now they're sellers. And the time to pull that trigger is either now or coming very, very soon. And really, I think the strategy here is the best thing for the present and the future. You can ship out your guys for the prospects you can bring in, and you're not just bringing in players to be named later. You're not just throwing Eric Hosmer away. You've got guys who can really contribute to good teams. You can demand a hefty sum for these guys. Wade Davis brought you Jorge Soler. That actual move doesn't feel very good right now. But Jorge Soler is a Major League Baseball player. They didn't trade Wade Davis away for some guy who would be around as an option whenever Bubba Starling needs a rest in 2025. You can get real players for these guys. Unless you wait until it's too late. Unless you let the market dry up. Unless the value of some of these guys decreases. Unless you get past the trade deadline. And it's not the most fun thing to admit to yourself. But even Dayton Moore is going to be doing it pretty soon if he hasn't already. The present definition of giving it your best, of doing your best. The real definition of that is going to be trading your guys away and giving those major league at bats to developmental guys like Raul Mondesi, who's up again today. You can let Raul Mondesi play 80, 90, 100 games, get all those at bats, put him at shortstop, let him get a feel for the big leagues at shortstop. Whenever you know that you're not trying to make a playoff run, that's not going to be as painful as it was at the beginning of this season. You can go, well, Mondesi's struggling, but it's okay because he's developing. He's getting used to major league pitching. He's getting used to playing shortstop in a big league ballpark. You can't do that right now. You can't let yourself feel that way whenever Raul Mondesi gets an at-bat. You go, oh, gosh. He's costing us hits, runs, games. But the sooner the Royals can let that go, the sooner the development for the future begins. The Royals mortgage their future to win a World Series. No one should have a problem with that. I certainly don't. They did the absolute right thing. 100% they did the right thing. What else would you have had them do? Of course, nothing else. You give up whatever you have to give up to go get a World Series. Those aren't guaranteed. Those opportunities don't come back year after year after year for most teams. So they did the right thing. Now they got to rebuild again. I don't know what's so hard about that. But there's always an angry caller, or there's always an angry Dayton Moore who says, if you're tanking, you don't deserve to be in sports. And we're not talking about throwing games. We're talking about being as smart as possible for your future. And I don't find that objectionable. We'll change lanes again whenever we come back. We'll talk to Scott Chasen about everything going on in the NBA, from the playoffs to LeBron, to the draft, to the rigged lottery. You heard me. That's next.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
I welcome you to think that I'm an idiot. That's great. Often, you'll be correct. Usually, you'll be wrong. But you'll be correct often enough. That's fine. I'm prepared for that. Call in and call me a dope.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. My name is Joshua Briscoe. Now joining us on the show, I think the most frequent guest / contributor in my version of Sports Sunday's history, Scott Chasen, formerly for every paper that had a KU beat, now is working for MLB.com in Chicago covering the Cubs. So obviously we're having Scott on to talk about the NBA playoffs. Scott, what are your NBA credentials exactly?
Well, first to back up, you said I'm the most frequent guest. I think after today, this is about my third time calling in just because of some technical stuff on my end driving. I'm definitely the most frequent now.
That's true.
Definitely,
yes.
Counting.
Yes, we've had three swings on this interview today, but it's coming through now. So I'm.
You know what they say: fool me once, strike one. Fool me twice, we'll try one more time from a parking lot.
That's exactly
NBA
right.
Credentials. NBA credentials. I do a podcast, Triple OT. You can follow on Twitter at Triple OTPP, stands for a podcast, talking about the NBA. I've covered multiple NBA games. I've, you know, done things like the NBA D League Showcase. I've covered an NBA draft. So
I think
I'm not the most credentialed NBA person.
No,
we got
what we wanted there. What I wanted you to say is I know about the NBA and I can prove it because I have a podcast. That's really what I really wanted to get there, and I feel like we got it. A couple of things are going on right now, if you're not aware, either you or you, the listener. If you're not aware, the NBA playoffs are going on, and there's a chance you're not aware because you haven't had a reason to turn to it at any point. So far, throughout the NBA playoffs, there's been one seven-game series, and the only two teams that matter, the Warriors and the Cavs, haven't lost a game yet throughout the playoffs. And, Scott, I'm curious as to your take on this. It's very objective, but is this good or bad for basketball?
Well, I saw earlier on, I don't know if this is still the case, but I have no reason to believe that ratings have continued to go up. And that's kind of a recent trend of a lot of sports leagues like this in the playoffs. So I don't think it's necessarily bad for the NBA. I mean, how many people would be interested in things like Boston, Washington's a bad example because Boston's obviously such a major market.
Right.
But like the Clippers and Jazz, I mean, the Clippers weren't getting any viewers. Nowadays they're interesting enough even when there are injuries and even when that was actually a pretty good series. But even when it isn't great, they're still going to get people watching. So I don't know if it's good or bad. I'm a fan personally, and my rooting interests have made me enjoy this playoffs. But also, I mean, if I wasn't a fan of players or the teams that are dominating right now, I could definitely understand being bored out of your mind. You mentioned the seven-game series thing. I mean, even some of the series like that Boston-Washington series that did go seven, half of those games were blowouts. You had
right.
no reason to watch any of them after the
right.
second quarter. So,
and there
yeah,
were,
it's interesting.
There were a bunch of six-game series also, but all of those six-game series included teams that simply don't matter. Like you mentioned Utah and the Clippers. Like, man, I didn't remember either of them doing anything in the playoffs at all, other than the Clippers getting bounced relatively early, because that's something that you can set your watch by. Other than that, I have no point of reference for anything that happened before the conference finals, and the conference finals have been disastrous, simply put. I mean, you told me earlier that you actually had the Cavs just stepping on the Celtics' throat before the series began, and you can flex on that in a second if you want. The series I think I'm more interested in is Golden State and San Antonio. How different would this series be with Kawhi Leonard?
Well, I'm not going to say the Spurs would be winning it, but, I mean, they would have at worst been up, been tied 1-1 going back to San Antonio. They were up 20-plus points. When Zaza Pachulia stepped under Kawhi Leonard and,
right.
and kind of injured him. He's had a few kind of tweaks of that ankle, which is why, I'm not sure he'll return for this playoffs. I think they're down 0-3 right now. But I think coming into the playoffs, I said the Spurs had a legit chance. The Warriors are great, but don't get this twisted in any way, shape, or form. This Warriors team is not better than last year's Warriors team. The only difference is they took a player from their key competition, Oklahoma City, who led the Warriors 3-1 in the conference finals last year, and put them on their team. Now, they lost a lot of the depth they had and the bench that made them so great, and that's why they won 73 games. And obviously Durant is a great player, maybe the second or third best player in the NBA, and makes them an elite team. But this Warriors team was beatable by a healthy Spurs team that played to its ceiling, and that's why you get quotes kind of without Kawhi Leonard by Manu Ginobili that, we have to play at 100 and they have to play at a 70, basically, for us to have a chance. Because without Kawhi Leonard, they don't have any chance. And no, I think it's going to be two sweeps in the conference finals. But I do think it would have been a good series. I actually took the Spurs before the playoffs started, and then I kind of went back on that a little bit. But no, I think that would have been a lot more fun than it is right now.
You said the Warriors are not better this year than they were last year. They replaced Harrison Barnes with Kevin Durant.
Yeah,
what do you mean?
But they didn't. That's not. In theory, sure, they replaced one starter with another, But you look at some of the guys that they don't have back, and it's kind of funny to say, well, the, you know, the effectiveness of Andrew Bogut and Festus Ezeli and, you know, Andre Iguodala is a year older. And, you know, obviously it sounds ridiculous, but they won 73 games last year. They were the best regular season team in NBA history and only lost in the finals because Draymond Green got suspended and three guys got injured, basically. They were maybe the best team in NBA history. I mean, to win 73 games, more than the 72-win Lakers, more than Jordan's teams ever won. I mean, that was the greatest team, regular season team, I should say, of all time. So I don't think it's a stretch to say they're worse. And now there's some, you know, it's ridiculous when people say, are they better without Kevin Durant because they won a bunch of games without him. That, I would say, is a ridiculous take. But I don't think it's crazy to say that the best team of all time happened last year. They just got injured, suspended, and ran into LeBron James. Maybe, again, maybe the best player of all time.
I'm not gonna let this go just yet because yes, obviously last year's Warriors had the greatest regular season of all time. But if you're this conversation is sportsy. But if you're gonna give me last year's Warriors team or this year's Warriors team to win a 7-game series, how could you not take the one that's also starting Kevin Durant? If I'm giving you that metric,
like I said, your point in principle, and a lot of people agree with you, by the way. So this isn't some, like, you know, 90-10 slam dunk thing. But you look at the way they played last year. You look at the teams they struggled with. I mean, for God's sakes, the Suns were just, you know, being physical with them and messing them up. And we haven't even seen the Warriors play that good a team in the playoffs. I mean, everyone they've played has been banged up. It's not their fault. You can't blame a team for beating who's in front of them. But they run into a good, healthy team, and they're down by 25 in the third quarter. I'm not saying that they would be down by 25 in every game against the Spurs or lose every game against the Spurs or anything like that by any means. But by all accounts, they've played one healthy, good team for three quarters, and they failed that test miserably. So I'm not saying they suck. They're probably the best team in the NBA. They're probably going to win the championship this year. But, no, I would take last year's team over them, actually in a heartbeat.
I'm staring out into the void because this simply doesn't compute. But it's okay. I'll let you have it. I'll move on. You mentioned the Suns, and I think you had the Suns come to mind as a terrible team who gave the Warriors trouble because the Suns are the team – after both of our hearts, or the team that our hearts have been unfortunately chained to, we're both Suns fans, which makes it really great for us to get to talk about the NBA draft lottery. What is more rigged in sports than the NBA draft lottery? I'll listen. Give me anything. Name one thing. And you know what? Not even in sports. One thing in the history ever, in world history, that's a bigger sham than the draft lottery. Go.
I was going to say, like, the Russian election.
Right, that's a good answer.
That topical, too, right?
It's very topical. That's also what I was thinking.
No, there nothing in the world is more rigged. It's hilarious. I was at Buffalo Wild Wings with a few friends watching the lottery, and I told them, I was like, the Suns have, like, a 55% chance to keep their top three pick.
Yep.
I will bet any of you at this table, even odds,
yep,
that they lose their pick. So the 40% chance, I'm giving even odds. A couple people put down a couple bucks. I was like, you guys are throwing your money away. And, yep, of course, they don't get a top three pick because it's seen it. They lose the coin flip to get Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, although I'm not saying a coin flip is rigged. Maybe it is, though. Maybe
who knows?
Double-sided
sure.
But no, by all accounts, I mean, a three elite player draft, some people have made the argument for four or a different three players than are on most people's minds. And, of course, the Suns, who ended up with the second worst record in the NBA, tanked, who shut down all their guys, who sacrificed this season, of course they don't get a top three pick.
The Lakers went on like a 10-game winning streak at the end of the year to go from 2-3, and they ended up with the second. It's so frustrating and not at all surprising. But so thoroughly frustrating. Also, you know, if the Nets would have had the actual number one pick and not just the original rights to it, then maybe there would have been another team more likely to get screwed. But even then, God, I'm so upset. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I am curious, though, about the very top of the draft. Do you see anything going not according to plan as far as guard, Josh Jackson in that order?
I definitely see the top two going to plan. Philadelphia is so interesting because for so long they did this best player available thing. And as we saw, you know, one, Sam Hinkie is no longer there. And two, what it really ended up happening was a lot of talent at the same positions. I mean, you look at guys like Dario Saric, Joel Embiid, Jahlil Okafor, even Nerlens Noel, who has since been, you know, traded. What do all these guys have in common? Well, they're all 6'10 or taller. Mm-hmm. Now you add Ben Simmons to the mix. He's like 6'8 or so, or a big forward who they want to handle the ball some. I think that kind of ties their hands a little bit. They could draft Josh Jackson. They could make a trade and do things like that. But if Josh Jackson's shooting never comes around, then what they have is three carbon copies, basically, with some differences. Josh Jackson will obviously be a much better defender than a guy like Ben Simmons, less of a ball handler. There are differences in their types of players, but in the generic model, they'll have a bunch of carbon copies of the same guy who are just slightly better at different things. So I think there's a chance if they feel a guy like Tatum, if they project him as a better shooter, they could go for him. I could see them going after a guard. Malik Monk is a name that's been rumored a few times. Me personally, I would still go with Josh Jackson because I think his talent level is better than those guys. But I think if something is going to happen, it's going to be with Philadelphia. It wouldn't shock me to see them make a trade either.
Trading up to get one of those top two guards, seeing if the Celtics are – maybe the Celtics want to go down to three, pick up Josh Jackson, a more natural fit in their lineup. Is that what you're saying, or something else entirely?
They could trade up, they could trade down, whatever. But if they get stuck with Josh Jackson, I mean – It's a great consolation prize, right? I mean,
yeah.
Everyone would love to have Josh Jackson as the third overall pick in the draft, a guy who, you know, by some scouting services was the highest-rated recruit ever. It's a great consolation prize. But, you know, for that roster, it puts them in a difficult position, and it's very easy to say, oh, yeah, just trade one big man. Oh, yeah, just trade, you know, Dario Saric. Oh, just trade, you know, Joel Okafor, whatever. It's very easy to say that. But when teams know you have to move a guy, you're never going to get the value back for them. And I think you saw that with DeMarcus Cousins basically getting Buddy Hield and a low draft pick.
God,
so,
no kidding.
It's a tricky situation for them. If I had to put money on it, I would say the most likely outcome is they bet Josh Jackson. But if a crazy name came up or something weird happened, you know, you couldn't be shocked by that at all. And in fact, it might even be even odds with Josh Jackson.
And you watched a ton of Josh Jackson, obviously, throughout last year. Again, you were a beat writer on the KU beat last season. What do you see Josh Jackson's transition to the NBA looking like? He seems to be very clearly the third best prospect. Not by my own estimations. I don't have that kind of knowledge base. But just across draft boards, across NBA sites made up of smarter people than I, he seems to be very clearly the third guy on the board. What do you see his college to NBA transition looking like?
Well, I think there are kind of one of two ways it could go. It's sort of like Lonzo Ball in that regard. Lonzo Ball is great in the open court, struggles in the pick and roll, which actually makes the Lakers a great fit for him. But going to Josh Jackson's question, obviously, the biggest thing with him is his shooting. Is he going to be a great shooter, or is he going to have to make his name as this hustle guy, this, you know, elite defender? He could become that. He became a very good rebounder at KU, used to guarding guys bigger than him, playing the power forward spot, and obviously that's college. Doesn't mean he's going to be an NBA four, but maybe he can with just how he competes in small ball lineups. So the biggest question of his transition is just going to be with that jump shot. You know, when he was in rhythm and he could shoot off the catch, off the hop, or the 1-2, it was actually a pretty effective shot, and you saw him shoot, you know, well over 40% from three on the back half of the season. Now, a lot of guys will tell you that's an anomaly. They'll tell you he didn't take too many attempts. A lot of the times the formula to project NBA three-point shooting is you take made three-pointers per game in college and then factor in free-throw shooting. Now, if you did that, Josh Jackson is obviously nowhere near where some of the other guys in the draft would be. So I think that'll be the biggest question for him. He can be an impact now guy. He can start making a name for himself year one just with his intensity and defense. But it'll be that jump shot that's really the biggest question.
You've got to bet your life on where Frank Mason ends up in the draft, ballpark range. Where do you put him?
You know what? I would say very early second round. I think Mario Chalmers got picked somewhere in there. It wouldn't shock me first 5-10 picks of the second round if that's where he was.
Also, Sviatoslav Mikhailiuk has still not signed with an agent as far as anything that I have heard. And also, KU just had Dwight Colby transfer out, leaving them an open scholarship position. Anything on your radar as far as Sviatoslav Mikhailiuk potentially going back to Kansas?
Well, it would seem logical, quite frankly, for, you know, this guy to pull out of the combine. And a lot of the time the combine doesn't help guys a whole lot, but I thought Steve might actually be a case where just seeing him and kind of putting him back in the forefront of guys' minds, reminding him that he was 19 years old. I thought that actually could have helped him, and it didn't really hurt him. But I don't think it helped him enough. So would not shock me if he returned to college, and it would seem logical. You know, Dwight Colby's gone, they have the scholarship. Trayvon Duvall is not coming to Kansas. So, yeah, why not?
Scott Chasen, at Chasen Scott on Twitter for now. But if you listen to this podcast a week from now, that could be completely different. You can listen to more of his NBA conversations on the Triple OT podcast at Triple OTP on Twitter. Scott, enjoy the final sweeping ups of the conference finals, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks for having me, man.
This is Sports Sunday. We'll be back right after this.
This is Sports Sunday.
Beards, I'm putting you in a completely unfair situation. How old do you think Jorge Soler is?
25.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Okay, Beards, listen. Here's what I need you to do this time.
All 40.
Right. He's 25, actually. You guessed so high.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The long weekend is almost over here on what was Sports Saturday and is currently Sports Sunday. This is the last segment of my dulcet tones until next weekend when who knows what will happen. But my name is Joshua Briscoe. You can always tweet me at JB Briscoe. Rob Dissell took up that mantle. Tweeted at JB Briscoe. Hey, I've listened to the show for 2 days. Still no fourth grade Mill Valley volleyball. Where the hell is Mick Schaefer? And also, I mean, just a good question. Because whenever I'm on Saturday these last 2 times, it's meant that Mick Schaefer is on vacation somewhere. And I feel like Mick Schaefer must have really good benefits with Spectrum. Or at least just a lot of vacation days. Or he's been saving vacation days since he was like 20. Either way, I'm glad he's using them up. I'm happy to fill his airtime. I'm glad that he's out there working on his, we're going to say tan. I had a different way of going about that. I decided not to. Bailed at the last second. I'm going to do a dangerous thing now. Nathan Wilhelm, better known as Beards McFly, has been producing the show, running the board, DJing for these last 2 days. It's been a real treat. And Beards is now going to be bringing his own content to the show. Beards, I haven't heard this sound. I've only heard you say that it's good. So you have to set it up completely.
So, on the Warriors and Spurs broadcast last night, Mark Jackson said what he would do if he found out that Kevin Durant was coming to his team.
I try to imagine if I was a coach or a GM or an owner, and I got word that Kevin Durant decided to come to my team, I'm going back to the hotel room and rolling on the bed with the pillow. Lord knows what you would do.
Yo, I'm trying to picture what you're saying, though, rolling on the bed with the pillow.
I'm just going to be so excited and happy and just have a good time.
Well, you know that oft-used expression, I'm so happy I could go roll on my bed with a pillow. That's famous. It's well known. You know what I said that at graduation? I was so excited to graduate that I walked across the stage, went straight back to my home, and rolled in my bed with a pillow. I was so excited. What does that mean? Like, man, I'm just having a really good day. Got a really good opportunity. Kevin Durant's coming to my team. No matter what it is that is rejuvenating your life, Mark Jackson has given us all a wonderful gift for what you will do in celebration.
I'm going back to the hotel room and rolling on the bed with the pillow.
I really like that. I think that's the future of outward expressions of excitement.
Rolling on the bed with the pillow.
It's just very odd to me. I'm not sure if he was trying to say something else or what. But it's good. I like it. In case you missed it, the Royals didn't play yesterday. They're playing a doubleheader today in Minnesota. Raul Mondesi is apparently on campus. Alex Gordon is going to be playing in the first game and then starting his paternity leave, which I don't totally understand, but okay, whatever. It's fine. And I guess that Mondesi is holding his roster spot while he's out. That ought to be really almost indiscernible, the difference between Alex Gordon's bat and Raul Mondesi. So that's the nice part. He's not going to be losing any particular power. Beard, you looked very excited for a second. What just happened?
Jeez.
What was that?
That was my text alert thing. Anyway. It was loud. I apologize.
Come on.
Anyway.
$2.
Yeah. Anyway, Mark Jackson's comments.
Rolling on the bed with the pillow.
Made me think of something. Didn't he have an extramarital affair? Rolling on the bed, you know, hotel room.
First of all, okay. Did he have
yes.
an extra? Okay. Don't
there was
say
also an extortion
he.
Scandal about that.
Don't say did he.
It was the thought that popped in my head because I was like, I seem to remember that being a thing.
All right. Well, there
and
we
yes,
go.
Yes, that was the case.
The last time he was so excited that he was rolling on the bed with a pillow, he was. Good work by you. Thank you for pointing that out. I don't know how. I just Googled rolling on the bed with a pillow now. And there's like an SB Nation article and it has the quote and the entire article after the quote is just what? There's not like an Urban Dictionary for this or something. If you search rolling on the bed with the if you Google search rolling on the bed with a pillow, the first result is the SB Nation article. Then it's like Bedding Essentials, BedBathAndBeyond.com, Pinterest, eBay. Just like buying specific pillows for your bed. It's a real weird one.
So what you're saying is Mark Jackson coined his own phrase there?
Yeah, absolutely. No one else has ever said the phrase, I'd be so excited, I'd be going back to the hotel to roll on the bed with my pillow.
I'm going back to the hotel room and rolling on the bed with the pillow.
I believe pretty firmly that just, like, statistically, you can say, has blank happened? And the answer is probably yes. Just we've had a lot of people and a lot of time here on this planet. No one else has ever said the phrase,
I'm going back to the hotel room and rolling on the bed with the pillow.
That's the first time that's ever been said, for sure.
In terms of excitement.
Yeah. Right. No, that entire thing.
I mean, like, a four-year-old kid might have said that.
You know what? That's a great point.
Caillou might have said that.
That's exactly right. Maybe Caillou would have been out, you know, going around town with his family on vacation, and he was just getting a little bit tired. And then he said, you know what, Mommy? I think that I'm
going back to the hotel room and rolling on the bed with the pillow.
They got a new voice actor for Caillou.
That's also the other thing. I think it's got to be at least the first time that a full-grown man has ever said that sentence. Maybe a little kid has said, I'm going back to the hotel woman rolling on a bed with a pillow. Excuse me, Billy. We're at Disney World. What do you want to do? I want to go back to the hotel woman rolling on a bed with my pillow. What a weird show. I wonder if this is indicative of something that we're doing wrong or that I'm doing wrong, really, where this is the second day in a row. And it's like, man, you know what? I feel like we did 2.5 real good hours of radio. And the last segment is just off the rails. And I don't know if it's because I'm real tired, because I wasn't prepared well enough, because I loaded up all the topics and shot through them, and now I stare at this screen wishing that we had Ned Yost postgame from last night so we could play The Walking Dead again. I was planning on doing that today, and then yesterday's freaking game got canceled.
Everything that Ned Yost says has been said.
We don't need this. There's nothing. We have nothing to play.
It's just really tough. So what
happened? There's no. Get out. Get out. Get out with that.
The station is going to be very solid.
No.
It's time.
No.
Why, Ned?
Brains.
Stop it. There's no, we have no Ned Yost press conference from yesterday. It doesn't happen. I have to imagine that that there are a lot of people who never heard that before just now and are the most confused. Because we've only played that one other time in the last, like, year. By the way, in case you were wondering, the Royals lineup is out.
Actually, I just realized we do actually have Ned Yost from yesterday.
Okay.
Thing that Ned Yost says has been said a million times
before. We already played this.
Man,
you can skip
tough.
Ahead.
I mean, he's just really tough.
Sounds. So I'm bleeping Ned Yost. Good work, Beards. That's good work by you. I did not know what you were going to present us with there. Also, by the way, the Royals called up Jake Junis to start today. Sent Al Albuquerque back down. Some really good alliteration from back-to-back pitchers there in that transaction. Jake Junis for Al Albuquerque. He's starting the first game. Other noteworthy things from the lineup. Alex Gordon's batting ninth. Nothing matters. Esky Magic has run out. I guess that's something that would be interesting to watch today. I'm sure. Is Danny, what time is baseball tonight starting? Is baseball tonight starting at noon straight up?
Yep.
Cool. So right after this, in about 6 minutes from now, Danny's taking over baseball tonight. But that'll be one interesting thing to watch from the first game of the doubleheader today is to see. I'm guessing it's pronounced Junis. I ought to know that. If it's actually, like, if he's Hispanic secretly and it's like Jake Junis, then it's like, oh, I feel silly. But I'm going to assume it's Jake Junis. Seeing what he does today will be interesting. He was supposed to start yesterday in Omaha. He's got a 3.07 ERA and 5 starts with the Storm Chasers, 36 strikeouts and 29 1/3 innings. He's been up a couple times with the Royals this year through 2 scoreless innings. This is his first start, though. So that'll be a little bit interesting. Ian Kennedy supposed to be activated from the disabled list to start the second game, allegedly. But also with a rain delay and everything and having a doubleheader, I wonder if Ian Kennedy's actually going to get that second start. I don't know if that's official either way or not yet. But I'll tell you who does know. Danny Klingscale. Baseball tonight. At noon. Baseball noon. Day. Baseball daytime. I want to go back now and talk about... We got a call. Very exciting. I want to go back and talk about quarterback value and Derek Carr and Patrick Mahomes and everything. We don't have enough time to do that. We have too much time to just, like, sign off. What was that, Beards? Who yelled at you? Nothing yet? Nothing for me?
I didn't hear anything, really.
Oh, okay. Were they angry, or was it a butt dial?
There was just background noise, and that was it.
Okay. Good way. Boy, limping through today. That limping through the last segment real strong. Even the caller was limping out.
Well, this has been a good long weekend. Danny's so excited to start baseball tonight that he can't even wait to come into the studio until after the
freezing in here.
It is cold in here. I sweat a lot. I have this problem. If it's over 73 degrees, I'm immediately drenched in my own sweat. I'm not proud of it. It's genetic, I think.
Pillow.
My pillows are drenched constantly. Thanks to Matt Connor of Arrowhead Addict. Thanks to Scott Chasen of whatever it is that he's currently working for. Thank you, Beards McFly, for the 2 days of wonderful producing. I only missed Charlie Carlin a lot still.
Wow.
This has been Sports Sunday. Bye, Mom!